Item 11 is open public input. We have several people that want to speak. All of you that are here to speak, I'm sure have been here before, you got 3 minutes, and I'm going to call you up three at a time, if I may, and we'll get started. Greg King, Ross Barkhurst, and Art Holman. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I guess I'll go first. Good morning, Chair Carpenter, good morning, Commissioner, Director Seeswin. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is dedicated to preserving, protecting, and perpetuating state fish and wildlife ecosystem while providing sustainable fishery and wildlife recreation and commercial opportunities. So what I'm here to speak about is pound nets on the Columbia River and policy through C-3620. These pound nets, how many, I just want clarification, how many are we looking at in the future? How is this going to protect recreational fisheries in my home river, the Calitz, Kalama, Lewis? If we're just taking hatchery fish out of there, how is that going to make it better sports fishing in the state for me and my constituents? How is this going to make it better for the commercials? Is this going to, this was outlawed in 1938, pound nets. It was only the rich canneries that had these. What will sea lions, or sea lions are smart animals. Are they going to get in these pound nets and destroy these fish runs? I mean, they're kind of setting it up. So what I'm asking for is a little more clarity on this from the commission and department on how far are we going to go? Is it still in the testing phase? I'm hearing that they're marking some fish, but they're not finding any data above Bonneville or where they're going. Are they spawning? Are they doing their thing? Are they being stressed out in the net pins? It looks like from a video I saw that they're kind of being stressed out the way they're being handled, and you know, just like some more clarity on these things.
Well, Greg, I'll tell you, thank you for that question. It's an in-depth question. We'll put it on the Fish Committee agenda and start asking questions and engaging some people that know more about it than, certainly than I do, but it's a good question.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
I'm done. Thank you, Commission.
Mr. Barkhurst.
Thank you. I want to talk about season setting in Willapa Bay. Left a lot to be desired this year. It's clear that sport fishing is no longer a priority in Willapa Bay. We had one priority species, Chinook, and the fishing is virtually gone in the bay. But for the dip in the control zone, and I appreciate the work that was done to figure out how to keep the control zone open, we're now at four fisherman days per fish as opposed to seven last year. The season was moved up, contrary to the policy, in the South Bay to September 3rd. It's the earliest that nets have been in years. And so freshwater fishing is all we have left. The two southern rivers are all we have left. And we're putting the nets in front of them. So we have a good opportunity for a repeat of last year where the nets get the fish first. Then we find out we might not be able to make egg take, and we shut down freshwater fishing to make egg take after the nets have got theirs. That's the way you kill what's left of sport fishing, and that's where we sit. I don't think the commission got a good, well-rounded set of recommendations there. I don't know how Forks Creek fish separating weir made out on your priorities yesterday, but if we don't get a fish separating weir in Forks Creek, then production is of Chinook is over in that hatchery, and sport fishing is over forever in the bay and in that river. I saw on your agenda yesterday a legislative priority for getting more money. I didn't see anything about a priority for improving and impressing your customers for getting more money. And believe me, most of them were opposed to a fee increase. I think they had some effect. So, as you probably know, we in our last advisor meeting before the South of Falcon meeting, we were presented with four commercial options for season setting that we'd never seen before. I had two rule changes I asked to be on the agenda, and we was told that there wasn't time. We had to review the four commercial options for season setting in Willapa Bay, which included sport fishing options we never saw before. That's all we had time for that night. And so the myth of public input into sport fishing seasons in Willapa Bay is just that. It's a myth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marcus. Commissioner McKaysey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks for your testimony, and thanks for coming up, and thanks for providing your comments to the commission in writing, as you often do, particularly on things like eelgrass and this or that. On the matter of recreational priority being gone in Willapa Bay now, often when one hears recreational priority, one could think that you're speaking of how many fish go to the how much of the catch goes to the recreational fishery and how much of the catch goes to the commercial fishery. But it sounds like you're talking about recreational priority is no longer in effect in Willapa Bay because of a switch in the hatchery programs as opposed to who's catching the fish. When you mentioned Forks Creek Hatchery as being, you know, with the changes there, you said the recreational fishery is over, the recreational priority is gone. So I'm going to get to a question here in a minute, but this change in the hatchery program, it's my understanding, and I'm still learning about Willapa Bay, was in the current policy that's being reviewed. It called for that hatchery program switch. We're undergoing a comprehensive review of the old policy. But are you criticizing then really what is in the old policy that called for this hatchery program shift, or are you not even speaking about the shift in hatchery production hurting the recreational fishery?
It isn't the policy. What I'm criticizing, frankly, is the fish department. Okay, I think that was a logical way to go if you wanted to have a wild fish river and cut down production in Forks Creek. But it was a decision made in isolation. I testified against that decision because I knew what it was going to do to the bay sport fishing. I think it is what's best for conservation. I think now you need to stick with it. But that decision was made in isolation. There were no provisions, okay? There were no provisions to allow some production there. And a fish separating weir is what is being done in lots of places. On the Columbia River, we have a simple one in the Nazel that works pretty well. And no provisions, no budget. When I ask the department management, what about a fish separating weir there so you can have some production without contaminating the hatchery fish? The answer I get is, well, we put it in the budget every year, but it doesn't have a high enough priority. And my response is, well, why are you looking at me? Who sets the priority? Okay. If you don't take provisions to assist the sport fishing and it's only in the North Bay because of the way the bay is laid out, then the fish department and the commission backed it, made a decision that killed sport fishing in the bay. The decision was not necessarily to cut down production there. The decision was to cut down production there and take no mitigating action for the customer. Don't have a problem with the policy. Have a problem with the priority setting in the fish department and perhaps ultimately with the commission. Willapa Bay should be the go-to place for sport fishing for at least one species, and it's the gone place. And what was left was freshwater fishing, which is pretty good. Put the nets in front of that now. So there you go. Don't see a priority. Not a policy problem, priority problem. As I see it, sir. Thank you for asking.
Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Holman?
We had a pretty good fishery there, and all of a sudden, we did better than you expected us to do. And you sat here and told us, well, we can't have that because you're taking the commercials off the water. We weren't taking the commercials off the water. They took themselves off. We have a 14% mortality rate. They have a 56% mortality rate. Now, if you're going to do a hatchery program to where you increase your natural origin fish, it's only common sense you use the lower rate instead of the high rate. But you people don't get that, I guess, because you continually want to fish at 56%. You can't do it. You're going to kill your stock and everything else. So the policy to begin with was pretty good. It gave the sportsmen an even chance. So now you change the policy. We aren't even in it. We have no priority left anywhere. But the commercials still have priority on the silvers. And they still have the highest number to catch fish. Now, I've sat in on a lot of meetings. I sat here the first time I was at a North Dakota meeting. I watched them, the commercials say, well, we want this day, this day, this day, this day, this time, and it was all put down. They ran this fishery. We had one sportsman ask for one day, well, actually 2 days, to change to where we had a high water fishery, and they were refused. Now, nothing slaps a person, a sportsman, in the face than to get 4 seasons set by gill netters and say, now you pick one. If the commercials are going to set our seasons, we don't need Ron Warren. We don't need the staff here in the fishery. Let them go somewhere else and do something other than try to set fish and seasons and destroy our fishery. Thank you.
I have a question, I guess, for two of you. I want to make sure I get this. I'm somewhat familiar with the area, but certainly not as well acquainted with it geographically as you guys. If you're going to have a viable, meaningful recreational fishery in Willapa Bay, you have to have fish in the North Bay, 2T and 2U, as I recall. Right. So by doing away with the Forks Creek production, that has pretty much eliminated that abundant available fish in the North Bay. Is that correct, the number
Not
one?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
We could get on the South Bay fish before they put the control zone in. When they put the control zone in, that killed our fishery completely. Because we can't get on the southbound fish.
Well, what's more important, fish in the north end of the bay that are destined for Forks Creek or fish in the south end of the bay for the recreational fleet?
Okay. First of all, you don't want to put small boats in the South Bay. It gets too rough there and you're going to kill people. We've already had one person killed already this year.
And somebody told me it's a fairly long run from the launch points for small boats. Okay, so which way is it? What's the most important region?
I don't think that's the right question. I don't think we can have one or the other. I think that we need both. We need a viable sport fishery in the North Bay if you want numbers. What I hear from your management is, you know, if you look at the numbers caught in the Nazelle and the Nima River in the south, they're pretty good numbers. What I hear back from them, but it's not enough different people, and there's not enough access. Okay. Another story, a different time, but the department has acted to limit that access. Where you get your big numbers is with boat fishermen, where you don't have to get permission to go on somebody's land. You get in a boat and you get 3 people and you go fishing. That's where the big numbers were. And so I believe they're both important. I think if you want to look at economic impact, obviously the boat fishing in the north was a higher economic impact. But we really need both. and we just can't eliminate the fish there and then put the nets in front of them in the south. I'd be lucky to make egg take. Couldn't last year without closing the fishing. And we're set up, depending on the timing of the run, we're set up to do the same thing again. And why is it that a really good sport fishery, the best small boat fishery left, I believe, on the outer coast, could be eliminated like that with no provisions? So it isn't the policy, it's the lack of dedication and priority to your sport fishing customers. And I think you need them all.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your comments. Tim Hamilton, Michael Barrell, and Bob Lake. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks for that question.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Hamilton for our two new members. I live out in Grays Harbor. I'm president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. I've spent 35 years raising fish. Very seldom ever catch one myself. But I also spent a lot of time on a federal, local, and state level in my career with governmental reactions. Okay, so I wanted to talk about the policy and how policies work. But I'm going to have to back up now. I guess I'll wait, try to stack that in later today. We were told, following the amendment by the policy, to the policy by this commission, when asked to our director down there, Chad Herring, is the department's position that the recreational opportunity or recreational priority has been eliminated. He said no. It's just no longer defined, which means it's worthless. Okay, I don't think that was your intent, but that's what happened. So when you have the North, the largest rate of return and successful rate of return coming into hatchery fish was into Forks Creek. Okay, when we wound all the hatchery production down in Forks Creek to declaring the Willapaw prime, they subsequently turned around and made a decision to ratchet up the hatchery production in the south. They have no way of catching those fish without a net. So what they did is we had the recreational fisheries peak out pretty good for a year or so on those fish that were still coming back over the 3 years, and then it crashed. And last year we had 1 out of 7 angler trips in the north actually catch a Chinook. Okay. So today, with the changes that we've made, they moved the fisheries up into the last part of the Chinook run to catch the fish in the south that they've decided to produce and shifted their production to the south. Now, in doing that, you have a problem where you can't catch the fish in the south that are going to be coming back without eliminating the natural origin spawners if you're not fishing selectively. So they went to a non-selective gill net, moved it forward, and the fear in the south, which is where the remaining southern streams have freshwater fishing for locals, is that they will remove them all before the fish gets into the rivers. So now you have nothing up north, and now you got nothing down south. So that's kind of the lay of the land there. And in a general sense, you could grow more fish in the north if you had a weir, because that's the problem was in the north, is they the stream, Forks Creek, the salmon won't go back a minute until later in the year. And the runs are coming early. They can't get up in that light water, so they spread out and contaminate the spawning bed. So that was a decision they made. But everything we have done from the purported false pickle routine of last year to the changes that occurred this year, we don't believe that the commission fully understood the impacts of those decisions. And there's an impression that where we're headed here is that literally in Woolapaw with no co-management, with no ESA, no nothing. And we'll explain that later with the hatchery reform group too. We've destroyed the fishing, and you can't get it back, and it'll take forever to get it back. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Michael, do you want to go next, or Bob Blake first? Okay, Bob Blake.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Commissioner Carpenter and Director Susie Wind. My name is Bob Blake. I am the president of the Wolf-Big Yellowhead Association and also the manager and executive director for the Woolapaw Regional Fisheries Enhancement Group. And three of the people I have heard testify here have got it wrong, totally wrong, because I was in all those meetings. I was on the advisory. I'm also an advisory for Woolapaw Bay and Grays Harbor both. They've got it totally wrong. I sat right there, and we told them when they were supporting to cut back the Chinook production at Fort Cook Hatchery from $3.5 million to $350,000, exactly what was going to happen. And this is a first-year return on four-year-olds out of that reduction. Okay? We also told them what was going to happen on the north end of the, or south end of the bay. South end of the bay, they ramped that back up to 800,000. That hatchery is capable of producing 5 million Chinook. That's what we should be doing. We should be producing the 3.5 million Chinook at Forks Creek, not the way it's going right now. We're 4 years behind. And I'm going to make a couple quick comments because this is, I know you guys, it's a nice day and we want to get out of here. But anyway, about three and a half weeks ago, I've myself seen five orcas in the Woolapaw. Yeah. And I think it was killing seals over in the middle spit. I was sitting right there at Washaway, and I seen them two different times that 1 week. But it was a big bull, and also the habitat bio for Region 6, she seen it when she was out there with the habitat bio from the shoal waters. They seen the orcas out there too. The point being, we can help the orcas a whole lot, actually put Chinook production back online. Now, we also have another issue on the NEMA. People keep hollering about there's 2,000 Chinook died in the river. Well, yeah, it's a mud hole. It's not a Chinook river. Let's produce chum out of there and move the Chinook production to both ends of the bay. Makes sense. Works for everybody. But here's one of the most important things is this whole thing. When we turned around and went to the sports priority, totally killed Pacific County's economy. The year before we went to sports priority, one of the biggest processors in Pacific County did $12 million annually gross on the Chinook production when he went through his processing thing. He had up to 80 to 90 people working full-time. They turned around. Now, with what's happened the last few years on our commercial fishery, we are down to, he's down to 7 or 8 employees year-round, because that's all he needs. And that's a big, big deficit for Pacific County. I mean, terrible. And Pacific County is a natural resources county. It is, we don't have, even what Olympia's got, or Tacoma, Everett, Seattle, we don't have that. What I'm saying is, when on this whole hatchery reform thing, I really hope you people, and especially the new ones, pay attention. And I appreciate Dr. McIsaac coming right up and saying he's not that familiar with the Woolapaw. I remember he remembered me back 20 years ago, and he's always fighting on dip-end fish. Well, dip-end fish are Columbia River tules primarily. There are some mixed stocks. The cutoff date was always August 15th for our fisheries in Woolapaw Bay on a commercial site. That was done by one of the habitat bios. So, if you'd like me to cut it short, I will. You know, but I mean, that's the whole thing I want to give you.
Your 3 minutes are up, Bob, so maybe wrap it up if you could.
Okay, well, all I was trying to stress was these people, the three of them, was right there in those advisory board meetings, knew exactly what was going to happen. And I told them what was going to happen numerous times. And back check the records if you don't believe me. But this is what's happened. And they pushed for it, trying to get the commercials off the water. Well, it bit them just like it bit us. But the problem is, we've got a resource. Oh, one important note. The dead stock index between hatchery fish and our natural spawners, they can't tell any difference. Period. They're all... back from yesterday, and I'll start out.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for encouraging me to come back from yesterday. So I'd like to continue a bit of the story and the rationale for focusing on offshore management and offshore offshore salmon management. And we left it that the early data that was available for us salmon, for king salmon evaluation in the Bering Sea came from trawlers. And this would have been in the 20s and the 30s. They were out there trolling and collecting and fishing commercially out there and salting the fish. And the scientists back then ended up doing the analysis out there for migration patterns, and it was not bad. And they could do it with scale samples and otolith before DNA. So we had some good data in the Bering, in the North Pacific on kings in the 20s, 30s, and into the 40s with trawlers. When last year in Anchorage at the North Pacific Fishery Council meetings, we came up with an idea. They understood that we need to start doing at-sea salmon surveying out there in the North Pacific. And specifically what that kind of kicked this off was going after the Kodiak fishery, rockfish fishery that was going after, had finally been able to exploit the rockfish on the rock piles south of Kodiak. Well, there was a bycatch of king salmon through there, and it's our king salmon. It's the West Coast king salmon that are moving through there. So they wanted to increase their king salmon bycatch, and we encouraged them. Twite was there, and other folks were there. And we said, no, bad idea. We need to figure out the timing and when these kings are going through there, and the strengths of the runs when they're going through there. Those kings, our kings here, they continue going west. They go out. Some of them go out to the Aleutians. Some of them go through False Pass into the Bering Sea. And then they also go out into the Russian waters, we're pretty sure. And that's where they're, again, where they're vulnerable for trawlers, Russian trawlers that are unregulated over there. And we need to work, we need to confront the Russians on that, and we can, and get them in compliance here. And I'd encourage you to push on that as well, because it's protecting our fish. But the yes, go on.
The Russian trawlers that you speak of, are they trawling for pollock, or are they targeting chinook? What species are they?
Okay, what the Russian trawlers, and I was in the commercial area for almost 20 years, and I worked in China, processing fish in China. And in that, I was seeing, I initially saw availability of salmon, Pacific salmon, off of trawlers. You could buy it. They were immature salmon, immature kings. And I'd bought kings on the Yukon, and they looked very familiar to the Yukon kings. They have a color, they got an oil content, and we purchased some and sampled them, and they looked very similar to the Yukon kings. We didn't do a DNA, but they were immature kings. And how they get on these, the trawlers work they have their A and B pollock season just like we do. At the end of the season, they're looking around for fish to catch. They're opportunistic. And that's when they, at the end of the pollock season, they start focusing in on the salmon, on the kings, and the chums or whatever they can get. And they're pretty effective at it. They've learned it from the Japanese, and they know how to trawl. Yes.
Well, we need to wrap it up. I mean, we could go on and listen to the information that you're providing for a long amount of time.
Right. I'll try and because there's two other quick topics I want to talk.
Hit on them quick, please. Sir.
Yes. So. What we came up with up there was using trawlers to do the survey work and track the salmon. And you can do that very effectively, just like they did before. Having a, you know, releasing a, we got lots of trawlers out there that are out of work
and southeast and down here. You hire them, you put an observer on that, you catch the fish on light gear, and you catch and release. And they came, I think it was the fellow out of Trident who came up with that. Can we do catch and release on this? Yeah, you can. You catch and release, you identify their size, you identify their species, and clip something, clip a fin, clip a tail fin, and you got the DNA. You got a data point, and you can follow them up. I learned my stuff from the Norwegians how to track the salmon offshore. Now, I would urge that to happen ASAP because we don't know what's happening out there. And we also need to protect our fish up in Alaska as well as Russia. There's interception points, and there are areas there that our fish are getting picked off. False pass, some of they go right through there.
Okay. I want to ask a question.
Yes.
And then see if there are any other questions.
And I just briefly on two other quick topics, too. After. Go on. Yes, sir.
Well, I'll see if there's any other commission questions at the time. This sounds like a North Pacific anadromous commission policy. This is way, it's very interesting and would certainly like to know more, but it's way beyond our authority or reality to do anything about it.
I respectfully disagree with that because the Alaskans, Fish and Game, are doing this right now. They're out there doing the studies and analysis and doing survey work. Alaskan Fish and Game is doing that for their protection of their resource. And it doesn't preclude Washington State from doing this work. I've urged Kelly Cunningham to set up a group to start working on this immediately.
All right, we're going to... Ron Warren's sitting over here. I mean, he's making notes copiously.
Okay, and I would be glad to meet and share and help out on this.
Okay.
Now, there was one other topic, and it had to do with... I'm involved in the Central Washington area, the basin, and the Alaskans call that the breadbasket, by the way, the basin, and that
quickly,
came back...
Please, we got...
You'll be seeing me again and applying for cattle grazing permits. What Daggard studies show is cattle grazing is good for riparian areas. What we are also finding that cattle grazing is good for salmon habitat as well. Clearly, you've had hoofed animals for thousands of years working around salmon streams, and they perform a very good function both in Alaska and down here. And if that we believe it's the case, it should prioritize getting in there for clearing brush and for helping out the salmon with reasonable grazing area.
Michael, we appreciate your comments and knowledge. Look forward to hearing more, and we'll
just one. I would also encourage the getting the bypass on the Grand Coulee. We have an opportunity now. There will be money available. We're working Chief Joseph is being worked, but the Grand Coulee is quite doable, and both the Alaskans and the Canadians want to see that move ahead. That would represent 70% of the potential of the Columbia if we can get around the Grand Coulee, and it's doable.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming in. Okay. That wraps up open public comment. We are now at number...